Soicles. What if I just, instead of giving out the talk of text line, just started giving up Robin Voss's number all the time? Soicles. 844-96 party. What is it?
Soicles. Write it down. 608-237-9163. Call now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
What's your confidence in higher education these days? Has it gone down over the last couple of years? Is it high? Is it worth it? I ask because Americans' confidence in higher education is down sharply. 36% have a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in higher education, but confidence is down from 48% in 2018 and 57% in 2015. And so I'm just interested as far as has your opinions of whether you went to college, whether you went to some college, or not, has your opinion of it changed over time? 844-967-2789. Because I feel like I very much attribute my career to having gone to college and the education I got. And I also don't know if the economic deal you're getting right now is worth it. And I feel like the stats are out, or like they're not conclusive right now on whether or not it's worth it. So I'd love to hear from you on whether or not you think it's still a good deal. Is going to college still the right economic move? Not for everyone, but overall, does it seem worth it? And do you have confidence that it is the best investment? 844-967-2789. Jane Van Ayer, what do you think?
You know, it's hard because it's just so astronomically expensive now. It's just hard to wrap my brain around. So for the year and a half that I went to the University of Minnesota, and I'm not going to remember this correctly, but it certainly wasn't even $5,000.
Yeah.
And now to walk out of an institution with $80,000 worth of debt or $120,000, it blows my mind. It just blows my mind. And I don't understand that enormous increase in 30 years how tuition has just gone kapow. It's incredible.
Well, and I think it's so much has to do with the fact of the money that was available through loans to create demand. You know what I mean? And so it's like by allowing, you know, by shifting the burden of who got the loans, was it the institutions or was it the students? And so instead of making it for the institutions, you could take out, you know, like, you know, and I don't know exactly how it would have worked, but like by supplementing demand, and putting no caps on what the price needed to be, it's gotten so out of control. But like most studies still say your ability to make more money is still through going to college. And so it's more of like a feeling now that more and more people are like, is it worth it? And like, I think maybe depending on what you're going to do with that degree, but also education is a state of mind and it is a value versus just, you know, the economic output of, does this get me a job? And so I'm just interested in your confidence in the institution of higher education. 844-967-2789, because in this new Gallup poll, all major demographic groups, led by Republicans, are less confident in higher education than they were a few years ago. And In 2015, majorities of Americans in all key subgroups expressed confidence in higher education, with one exception, independents. By 2018, confidence had fallen across all groups, with the largest drops, 17 points, among Republicans. But it's not just Republicans. Confidence among adults without a college degree and those aged 55 and older dropped nearly as much as Republicans in 2018. And so there's only one key subgroup with majority level confidence in higher education, which is Democrats.
There you go.
Which is also interesting. It's like, why is that the case? And this is not to say that the value of what you can learn when you're at college isn't there. And I think there's also a huge argument for getting out of your comfort zone and everything that else that college can do for you. Like I was talking to, we have someone who's graduated high school recently, he and all of his friends are not going to college.
Oh, really? None of them.
They're either joining trades or they've started their own small business. And I think that makes sense. One thing I'm a little worried about is the fact that they're all still living at home and I'm not worried. They're not my kids, but you know what I mean? As far as the ability of what college does to get you out of your parents' house, to get like the training wheels on for being an adult,
living on your own,
to meet new people and kind of the exposure of doing things instead of, you know, potentially just always staying where you're from. Now that's something that you could argue with me on, but like, I am a big advocate of like, go do other things. You can always come back.
Go away.
But go do other things. And so, but I don't know. Has there been a shift for you as far as, especially in, I think what is wrapped up in the student loan crisis, has there been a shift for you in how confident you are in our higher ed, like education institutions? 844-967-2789. And I don't know, like, I don't know if it's just tied into student loans. And I think it has to be. Like, I think if you take out the expense of this and how much it cripples people without guaranteeing the promise of raising your status in life and getting a better job, because I think there's also how, you know, I think a lot of, because some of it's also a culture shift for what is necessary to get the jobs that you want. And I think if that started to actually change and employers started to realize or started to shift on how often they're looking for a bachelor's degree or a master's degree or like a piece of paper to say that you can do this job, because I think right now that there's still a fair amount of people who do say that, which may or may not be true. I don't know. Like, I think there's a litmus test as far as being able to finish something. I think like when you think about GPAs and resumes, like at least when I was hiring for sales jobs and looking at people's GPAs or combined with what work they did, what extracurriculars they did, what are they interested in? What is their work ethic? What is their ability to like finish things that they start? And like a skill set that is like displayed over a resume versus just a GPA. But like, it does show that, like, if you have a high GPA, it shows that you can like study and work hard, I think, but maybe other people will disagree with me.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Is it worth it to go to college? Are you still confident in kids going for a college education?
Because I'm trying to think as like, you know, this is a long time from now, but the encouragement of like, how different is it going to be when my kid is graduating high school? Will it just be a completely different culture and how we are, how we're approaching school in general, how we're approaching colleges, how we're encouraging? Because like, as of today, if I had a high school student, I feel like I would encourage them to take a year off and then still go to college though.
Yeah.
I wouldn't force them. I wouldn't be like guilt them into it, but I'd just be like, listen, like, I think that there's an argument and there's a cheaper way to do it. You can start at community college. You can go to state schools. But at least today I would say I still subscribe to, it's a there's lots of benefits to it, but maybe don't take out 80 grand to study English.
844-967-2789-844-96-PARTY. Jack from Merrimack. Good morning, Jack. What do you want to say?
Well, first of all, the Republicans have consistently cut the state and national supports, I guess I'd call them, for university education. When my son graduated from one of the UW schools, not Madison, but from one of the system schools, the total cost of his education just for the college alone was about $50,000. Even working full time, I can see how somebody could easily graduate with $30,000-$40,000 in debt. If they work full time during the summer and part time in school, that shouldn't happen. When Bernie Sanders ran for president, he put forth a program where he said, for about $40 billion, we could have college for all who qualified, in other words, who had reasonable grades and wanted to pursue a higher education. The Republicans, again, would scream, oh, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. But in fact, in the last so-called budget, they added over $40 billion to the defense budget alone, and that was money that the Pentagon didn't even ask for. So the money's there. All we have to do is support our students, which is why it is, to me, so just horrendous that you can't even forgive $10,000 in college debt, much less, you know, $40,000 or $50,000. That we really should be supporting our students with.
But we can afford to forgive PPP loans. Don't forget that. Thanks for the call, Jack. We got to take our first break, but when we come back, we will keep the conversation going. I actually found an interesting TikTok that kind of critiques it pretty harshly and makes some strong arguments. So we'll play that when we return. This is As Goes Wisconsin. So useless. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are talking about whether or not college is worth it, because there's a new poll out that says basically it's, I don't know if it's a record low, but over the last 7-8 years, Americans' confidence in higher education is going down across all, like basically all major demographics. And so trying to get your opinion on, has that been true for you? Has your confidence in the value of going to college or getting higher education gone down for you over the years? And so we have a message from our friend Joe McClear on the Facebook live stream. As always, you can watch us and along with listen to us on the live stream on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Joe says, I think college is worth it if you have a long-term plan in life, which is a lot to ask of an 18 to 22-year-old. When I went to college, I thought I had a plan, high school teacher. But that changed during my sophomore year, and I wound up graduating with an English degree. If I didn't go to law school and start a career in law, my undergrad would have been about $50,000 experience that probably wouldn't have benefited me much in the job market. How many jobs require an ability to critique your sonnet after all?
I'm sure they're looking for sonnet critiquers somewhere, Joe, just not a lot of them.
But, you know, I said this before, so my major in college was a combination of public health, public policy, women's studies, and like poli-sci. So it was interdisciplinary studies, but the point of that major was you combined classes to make your own major. And I've said this many times,
I certainly didn't use that as soon as I graduated from college. I was working in tech and sales. But so much of what I learned stuck, like not all of it, but like a lot of it has stuck with me, and the things that it influenced and I still reference to this day. Like I took one of my favorite classes was an AIDS in Africa class that I still have things that I remember from that, just in whether it's in conversation or just like giving me context. And like, I'm sorry, I'm just not someone who probably would have picked up those books had I not had the syllabus to do so.
Right.
Like I understand that there's some people out there who have, like there are the, you know, Will Huntings in the of the world who just can has like their access to the world is a library card, and they have the intuition to go pick up so many random books and just consume them. Some of us need a curriculum, and we need to be told you have to read this book and you're going to get a grade for it, and you know, get a little kick in the pants to push ourselves outside of what we naturally want to do. And I still think that college does that. For that price, I don't know.
It's a lot of money.
I don't know.
It's a lot of money. 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY. Do you want to, shall I run the TikTok?
So, yeah. So I came across this account, and she's answering a question of someone kind of like questioning her critique of colleges in general. And so this is Degree Free is the account. So let's play it, because she's not wrong.
But what do I have against colleges? What I have against colleges is that they're essentially hedge funds. The endowments of colleges and universities in the US are worth $848 billion. The median college graduate in the US 5 years out of college makes $47K. But lots of us know people with $80,000 worth of student debt for bachelor's and master's degrees that don't make them nearly that much and that they will never pay back the debt on. Oh, and there's no hope for that, because the debt is miraculously unforgivable. You can't use defensive infancy. You can't declare bankruptcy. Oh, and somehow it's also the only financial product that the people selling it don't have to hold any reserves. They're not accountable for what happens after they sell it. And you continue to take on more debt as long as you're still spending. What I have against colleges and universities in the US is that they are the most unethical big businesses that we see. And they make all their money off children, using fear of loss and hope of gain, which are just sales tactics. That's my problem with them. So what do I do about it? I tell people there are other options. I also tell them that college does not equal education. All you have to do to see that I'm correct is look those words up in a dictionary. A college is a business. Education is a state of being. It's a value. It's not for sale. And you can become educated anywhere. So I think a better question is, why do you have such a vested interest in gatekeeping education? Good jobs. And why do you have an issue with someone talking about other options and telling people that they don't have to go? Because that shouldn't matter. Unless you're afraid that I'm right. And you have a vested interest in your degree. Because you sunk a lot of money and time into it. Which I would understand. As for what do I have against college grads? Nothing. I'm married to one. And I consistently help them pivot to other jobs that actually pay them what they were looking to make without having to pay for more paper that doesn't get them the result that they are looking for, which is more than I can say for the colleges that they paid astronomical amounts of money to.
So again, that is an account called Degree Free. I think the website is degreefree.co. And she makes some interesting points. The fact that, you know, comparing colleges to hedge funds as far as who owns that debt?
Yep.
And the fact that they can't refinance and there's no, you know, there's predatory lending when it comes to it and stuff. And there, it is a business. And I can say, like, when you put it in that way, I understand why some people are like, it's a scam. Whether or not the stats actually support that as far as people's lifelong earnings, I get it.
We've got Scott from Chicago on the phone. Real quick, Scott, you only got about a minute. What do you want to say?
Yeah, so kind of a two-pronged response. I think there are definitely cheaper ways of getting your education, especially depending on what field you're trying to go into, whether it's business, it may be less necessary versus like medical, it's definitely more necessary. But also, as far as what you're saying with the political confidence, I remember, weren't it the Republicans that were trying to make it harder for college students to use their college address as their voting location? So that it's like Republicans are accusing colleges of basically instituting groupthink with voting demographics. The Democrats don't have as much of an issue, but Republicans think that colleges are making students more liberal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the political aspect is a completely different thing as far as I think an additional thing to the student loan. So thanks so much for the call, Scott. We got actually are coming up against a break, and Dan Schaefer is going to be here when we return, because it is Tuesday. So we're going to recombobulate with him on the sales tax vote in Milwaukee's Common Council. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Words, a simple melody.
One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are here with our second edition of Recombobulating with Dan Schaefer on Tuesdays, because last Tuesday was the 4th of July. So we are now we're now back on schedule. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You know, it's a discombobulating schedule. We're here to recombobulate, right?
Exactly, as always. How many times did you get tagged in the recombobulation area at Summerfest specifically over the last 3 weeks?
Oh, a lot of them. A lot of them. At the end of the, you know, they had the recombobulation area at the bottom of the sky glider. And the one day I did make it down to Summerfest, I had to take a picture there as well myself. So the brand is strong.
The brand is strong. I would say I do not have something similar where people can take pictures of and say, hey, at Krista, the way that they do with you with the recombobulation area at the airport and now Summerfest.
I always know when my friends and followers are traveling, because they send me pictures whenever they go through the recombobulation. A lot of people traveling in the holiday week last week, so that was fun too.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, well, let's get right into it. Today is a big day. Today, the Common Council is voting. Actually, it was supposed to, I think you just told me it was supposed to start at 9, but the Common Council is voting today on the sales tax. So what inside information do you have for us on what's going to happen?
Yeah, this is a huge, huge vote for the city. The state passed their bill on shared revenue. Evers signed it into law. It included all of those anti-local control provisions that will, kind of hamstring Milwaukee in a variety of ways. But those are already passed.
So, yep.
What the vote today is on is whether they're going to raise that 2% sales tax to essentially be able to keep the city afloat. It's not exactly the most inspiring message that you would deliver to people, saying like, hey, if we don't do this, we're going to have to close, 10 libraries and all kinds of fire stations and cut every part of city government. But that's the reality that we're facing. And I think the Milwaukee Common Council went through an exercise to just kind of understand what it would mean to have a 25% across the board cut, which is what the reality would be if the sales tax is not raised today. So the vote was this, like you mentioned, the session was scheduled to begin this morning at 9 a.m. It started about 45 minutes late, and then is immediately after some ceremonial action to begin the session, they went to a 10-minute recess, which has now been going on for about a half hour. hey, you know what? It's better
tight
than holding
schedules over there at City Hall.
It's better than what the state legislature does and holding sessions at 2:30 in the morning. But it's still not exactly running super smoothly.
Well, it's going to be lunchtime soon. They're going to have to take a break for lunch.
That's right. Well, maybe they'll push through lunch to make this incredibly important vote. But this is really one to watch. I think, that the requirement that the state handed down with its bill was that it would require a 2/3 vote of the Common Council. So you need to get 10 of the 15 members voting in the same direction on this one to approve that sales tax increase. What I have heard, so far is that it is going to be a challenge. But I think they, the Kevler Johnson and others in city leadership who negotiated this deal pushed really hard for for it to be a two-thirds vote instead of a unanimous vote, because I think that's what they understood that they would be able to get here. So I am hopeful and optimistic that this will pass today.
Have you been able to talk to many of the elder men, elder people?
No, I've been talking to some sources at the city level behind the scenes and all that, but I haven't interacted directly with the elders on this one. It's frustrating that so much of these negotiations, both at the state level, at the city level, and all that, do kind of happen behind the scenes, mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, in public session the way that we would hope. But I've seen some signaling from those in the Common Council. I think Marina Dmitrievich said, like, yes, we need to pass this and to live to fight another day. And and Jonathan Brostoff said something yesterday similarly. And Gwen Moore weighed in yesterday as well with a public statement encouraging those on the Common Council to pass the sales tax increase. So all of the momentum is really headed in that direction. But there were some public sessions that Common Council members held around the city last week where there was some pretty vocal pushback.
My next question was going to be. Well,
yeah.
And so do you feel like there could be fallout from, so if there's the push right now because of the timeline, that even if we get the two-thirds vote today, do you think there could then be fallout for some of the alders or even Mayor Johnson in the next election cycle because there wasn't enough of a public education campaign around this to get voters on board?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you think about a big vote like this, that's going to really stand out, this is going to be something that people remember come election next year. So wherever you stand on it, I think this is an important vote for council members to position, because they'll all be up, you know, as we have this endless election cycle in Wisconsin. We're in a little bit of a lull right now, but those spring elections are really not that far off. So whether it's, you know, every member of the Common Council and the county board that will be up for election next spring, or, you know, executive offices like the mayor and the county executive, this is going to be something to watch. And I think, you know, there's a lot of understood frustration with people. And because I think, you know, the reality of the situation is the state has forced the city into this corner by cutting shared revenue, by making cuts to local government, and really hamstringing Milwaukee's ability to have local control. The bill that was passed was not necessarily a good one for Milwaukee, but it does the way for us to live to fight another day. And that's kind of been the phrase that I've been, you know, going with on this. There's a lot of problems with the state bill. People are right to be upset with it, but I think, you know, if you're upset with the bill, the vote to organize around was the one at the state level. This is not the one that's going to make any impact on, you know, making changes to the Fire and Police Commission, requirements with police funding, requirements with the streetcar, all these different kinds of things. This is not going to change any of those. So that vote was happening in the state legislature. This vote to essentially keep the lights on in the city and avert the fiscal cliff and avert a real catastrophe is right in front of us this morning. So it's, you can't overstate the importance of this vote that they're going to be taking right now.
Absolutely. We are recombobulating with Dan Schaefer on this Tuesday, our new weekly segment with him. And so focusing one more question on kind of the average person in Milwaukee and those public hearings that happened last week, because the Journal Sentinel's headline that came out of that was, quote, "Then we'll go bankrupt. Milwaukee residents bristle at 2% sales tax path to stave off financial crisis." Do you think the average person knows what that means? Like,
no.
Do you think, and that's
I
what I mean.
Know
like,
what that means, totally.
And that's fair. But I just wonder, that's for whoever said that at the public hearing, like, it's such a flippant response of like, well, then fine, like then the city goes bankrupt, and without, I think, really understanding the ramifications of what that means. So, like, could you from what you understand, just rehash what, if we don't pass this, if we don't get this 2% sales tax, what that means for, like, and who gets affected the most by what cuts will inevitably have to happen.
Yeah. So some people have made the comparison to what happened in Detroit a while back, where they effectively, you know, went bankrupt and had to have, you know, federal control over their finances for some time. So, like, if you're worried about not having local control now, if we don't pass this, that could go away through a bankruptcy or, you know, the way that that would be constructed. But I think that is still would be a ways off. What would happen first is devastating deep cuts to the public sector across the board in Milwaukee. So the Common Council went through this exercise, trying to understand what a 10% cut and a 25% cut would mean to local government, because that is the reality of what Milwaukee would be facing without this new revenue source in the form of. And so with a 25% cut, and I'm kind of quoting this from a Journal Sentinel article by Allison Durr, it would involve the elimination of up to 890 city jobs, closing 10 of 13 library branches, closing more than half of all fire stations, closing Milwaukee Police District 6 and the new traffic safety unit. That's what the reality would be. With a 25% cut. And that's not to, and that's before even getting to things like garbage pickup and snow removal and all these, you know, Department of Public Works stuff that already, I think if you live in the city, you feel like is probably underfunded and under-resourced. That would get significantly worse. You wouldn't know when your garbage is getting, if your garbage is getting picked up, if the snow is getting removed on your street, because there would be further gutting of an already underfunded public sector that we have in Milwaukee. So, And I think having this sales tax, you know, that this is constructed in the state of Wisconsin is very different from a lot of other states. Most cities have the option to raise their own sales tax without having to go to the state to ask permission. Milwaukee, in the way that the state constitution works in the state of Wisconsin, it requires any new taxes to be approved by the state legislature. So it's not like Milwaukee can say, hey, we're going to raise taxes on the rich, right, to pay for these types of services. We can't do that. We don't have the option to do that. The only option that has been approved and been made available to us by the state legislature is this sales tax. And so it's kind of this or nothing. So it's this or you're cutting things across the board. You know, you're raising fees on, you know, your water bill or other just kind of like random fees throughout the city and things like that. And this is kind of the only option to have that new revenue source to be able to fund these services. And without them, I think Milwaukee is going to suffer greatly in the future, and that bankrupts lose control over its financial future at all. So this is a really important vote.
All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes left before we have to let you go. So I definitely wanted to get your any reactions to the big news last week when Governor Evers signed the budget with 51 partial vetoes. Any takeaways from that and some of the fallout that came from it?
Boy, the fallout has been interesting, hasn't it? Republicans not being able to cut taxes on the rich. They are really going through
really upset,
really going through it, as they say, and just absolutely having a wild public meltdown. Robin Voss tweeting from his European, I don't know, tweeting from Europe, where
he's
is
somewhere right in Brussels. He's at like a convention or something.
Yeah, at some convention about this. But yeah, it's been a full on meltdown across the board in reaction to his very creative veto of the partial veto on education and the veto of the tax cut. And I think we can get into some of it after the break, but, you know, Evers has proposed middle-class tax cuts that the Republicans have said no to and voted against and turned down because they insisted on cutting taxes for the wealthiest Wisconsinites, because that is their only economic policy. They keep going back to their only economic policy over and over and over again, and it's cutting taxes on the rich, trickle-down economics. It hasn't worked. It didn't work last decade. It's not going to work again. It's never worked. But they keep going back to that same well over and over and over again.
Absolutely. Well, and when we come back from the break, I also would like to, because I think there's an argument to be made that he could have just vetoed the top tax bracket and kept that monstrous 36,000 to 405,000, like, dishonest tax bracket that we have. But we will talk about that more after the break. We are recombobulating with Dan Schaefer on As Goes Wisconsin. Stay tuned. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are recombobulating with Dan Schaefer on Milwaukee news, on Wisconsin news, and getting your reactions from last week's budget, signing of the budget from Governor Evers and the 51 partial vetoes that came with it. Jane, you said we had a good text?
We do, from the 414. And again, you can always check in with us, 844-967-2789. Since the state enacted all of these new rules and regulations on the city and county, why didn't the state just impose the sales tax on the city and the county like it did for Miller Park? It seems like the state left all the dirty work for the local elected leaders.
That's a good question.
Yeah. And aren't they talking about bringing that sales tax back anyways to pay for the Brewers, for the AmFam field again?
I don't know what exactly they're talking about when it comes to paying for the Brewers, but that's a good point. But that would require, you know, the state to entity to collect those sales taxes and then administer them. So I think the more direct route, and the route that the city and county leaders were advocating for, was to have the local control over it too. Because if you constructed something at the state level to collect those sales taxes, in the form that the baseball park district does, that's state run. So I think you end up running into a lot of the same problems, which is that you have something that is run by the state that the city does not have enough control over. And part of why you need that sales tax, and I know we've had all these different requirements that the state passed down with it, is to have something that exists independent of what's happening in Madison. And as we've seen in recent years, the state government of Madison can be hostile to Milwaukee. It can change their mind on things, can be kind of all over the place. And I think that revenue stream is control is a really important piece of this. So I think that's probably not something that city and county leaders would have wanted, would be the state to have more control over their finances there too.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the budget, tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think that there could have been an argument for Evers to leave the second highest earnings tax bracket and keep that cut in there. I also just like, what's been phenomenal to me is to watch how headlines and spin has worked in this budget, like this specific budget cycle specifically with the tax cuts and how we talk about them. Because when you say the two highest earning brackets, because of how our brackets are, that goes down to $36,000 a year, which doesn't, to anyone, shouldn't feel like that's someone who belongs in the second highest earning tax bracket. And when you take medians and averages across huge swaths of people, like, the numbers don't feel like they're telling the whole story. So I feel like on both media side, obviously on the side of Republicans who are tweeting, on the side of Democrats who are tweeting, this has felt very dishonest and like paint. Maybe dishonest is a strong word, but it's felt confusing of like what actually this means. And in reality, for most of us, everything stays the same. Mm-hmm. Is that an easy way to say it?
Yeah, no, that is an easy way to say it. And I think, you know, we saw the report. Yeah, there was a report yesterday from WisPolitics saying we're going to have about a $4 billion surplus after this, after Evers vetoed this. So the great surplus debate will continue into another legislative cycle, whether it's bringing up some sort of, you know, different change to the tax code and whatever. But yeah, I think the argument could be made that Evers, you know, didn't need to veto all of basically the majority of the tax cut. And there has been so many shenanigans around the messaging on this. People will use statistics and manipulate them and to their advantage. And I was, you know, joking last week after every Republican in the legislature was saying, oh, your average tax will go down. Well, that's a poor way to characterize this because the joke that I made that me and Giannis Adetokounmpo have an average salary of more than $20 million doesn't exactly show an accurate portrayal of either of our salaries. So I think that's a manipulative way to continue to discuss this. But we also, you know, it is a very broad range within that tax bracket that it vetoed between, you know, what, $36,000 income and $370,000 income. Like that, the fact that those are in
it just depends if you're married or not. As far as I see different numbers of what the actual bracket is. How long has it been like that?
I don't know. I know that there were a lot of changes made to it under Scott Walker when we were cutting taxes and not growing the state for 8 years. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think another thing that has gotten lost in the mix, you know, because of the partial vetoes and all of the attention paid to, you know, the education one with the 400 years thing, which we know is not actually 400 years. It's just going to kind of go on to the next budget cycle when it's addressed again, is the fact that, you know, Evers signed a budget that makes deep cuts to childcare, doesn't include mental health funding. There are still huge problems with this that were not addressed in that partial veto as well. So I think as, you know, we look ahead to having that $4 billion surplus, to having further conversations on, you know, let's say a middle-class tax cut or addressing childcare or addressing mental health and any of these things, those are things that were not completed in this budget as well. And I think those kind of flew under the radar because of the partial vetoes last week as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with the minute and a half that we have left, I have to ask you, as someone who is fairly prolific on Twitter, have you joined Threads?
I have joined Threads. Yeah.
Thoughts? Thoughts? Reactions?
I mean, Twitter's so been such a cesspool right now, but Threads just feels like a lot of brands posting at each other so far, and I can't quite get on board with that. And if I follow somebody, I don't actually see them in my feed yet. And it's still Zuckerberg, who I don't particularly like. And I feel like he has ruined loads across the country. So I'm not like super excited to get on board with the Zuckerberg property either. But, you know, I signed up, I parked my name on there to have the username and have the recombobulation area's username, and we'll see what happens next.
And we will see what happens. Well, it's never boring. It's never boring in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, or on the interweb. So Dan Schaefer, always so fun to have you here. We will have you back on Tuesday from 10:30 to 11 to recombobulate. Thanks and see you then.
Thanks for having me. Talk soon.
Talk soon. All right. When we come back after the top of the hour news, we will be talking to New York Times bestselling author Michael Perry and veteran Wisconsin journalist Julian Emerson about farmers' mental health. It's going to be a great conversation. Stay tuned.